First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Email a newsletter where you can see everything sent to your mailbox on a weekly or monthly basis. I'm also doing the RSS feed for all the radio shows sent direct to you, whether it's podcast or a reminder of the live show. In addition, there is a donate button there. Your donations definitely help us keep growing, so we would appreciate any help there as well. I know, folks, I'm already getting some noise. You know, lower the music. Yeah, I was having a problem with that slider there for a second, but I think we got that straightened out. I tell you, for you guys on our listening queue, I forgot to mention you just hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air as soon as possible. A lot going on. It's been kind of crazy, and I'm being told to speak into the mic. Are we having problems hearing me yet?
You were at first. You sound pretty clear right now.
Okay. It was probably because the music was so loud, and I apologize for that. You know, you get into these sound cards, and they kind of drown each other out. But that blew my whole introduction. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Oh, holding up, Ms. Springsteen. Still working for a living. Haven't hit the Powerball of the Mega Millions yet, so, you know.
Well, that's my retirement plan. I can definitely relate to that. I tell you, man, we've got all kinds of things going on. I want to put this little quick story out there. We normally don't cover sports and things. We've got so many important things to talk about tonight. We definitely want to try to get out of here on time tonight so we can watch the debate, as you refer to it, between Mitch McConnell and Alice in Wonderland Grimes. But I thought this was pretty interesting. U of L, of course, played Clemson over the weekend. They got beat 23-17. You know, Clemson that didn't score an offensive touchdown. What does that tell you? But anyway, what was really funny about this, if there's a funny part to Louisville losing, a Clemson fan found his way onto Louisville's bench and was sitting in on a defensive huddle on the sideline before he was caught by Louisville staffers. What's remarkable about this is this guy wasn't hiding anything. He had on the Clemson shirt and everything. I mean, he was clearly a Clemson fan. How the hell did this guy get to the Louisville bench and in a defensive huddle? I don't know if you saw the video on that, Ed, but I was really laughing. I really was. How about you?
I didn't see the video, but, you know, it's one thing to consider. It's kind of funny when you look at it from the, you know, the athletes and the fans angle, but where was security at that point? You know, not that ISIS or anybody's going to attack, and not that we live in fear, but when you got 80,000 people crammed into a tight area, you know, that is a target of opportunity. So, I understand you can't police 80,000 people, but my God, when, you know, in that Ohio State game, when one goes running onto the field, he gets taken down. You know, and hell, I've had family members that have played college ball and high school ball, and I couldn't get on the sidelines without the big badge and everything. So, you know, that's a big snafu on Clemson security. It's like, guys, you know, whatever the hell you were doing, you know, get off your iPhones and pay attention. People just jumping over the rail and going out and checking out the game on the grill. And let's face it, on top of everything else, he didn't pay for that.
It was just funny. It was hilarious. I saw that. I just really wanted to just mention it tonight because I thought it was hilarious. You know, how great is security at these games? You know what I mean? So I just thought it was humorous. You know, we do a political show here, folks, and we've got a lot to talk about. And I tell you, we're going to start with Alice in Wonderland Grimes. We'll work our way into David Patterson and stuff. But I found it fascinating that Alice in Wonderland Grimes was interviewed by the Courier-Journal last week, of course, for their candidate endorsement, which is automatically going to get that because she's a Democrat. But it was really strange because the Courier-Journal actually called her out on her refusal to state whether she voted for Barack Obama or not. She's trying to act like this was some kind of a big deal. She actually made it a big deal when it really wasn't. Anybody that would have seen this editorial would truly see just how ill-prepared and outmatched she really is. She is nowhere near credible enough or smart enough to even think about becoming a U.S. senator. She had three different opportunities to say that she voted for Barack Obama or did not vote for Barack Obama, and she used all three opportunities to ignore it, and it was very, very fascinating. Did you see that at all?
Yeah, I didn't see the live interview, but I've seen the highlights, and, you know, I understand that in politics nowadays, you don't want to set yourself up for a gotcha question, but, you know, come on. Let's be real about a few things here. McConnell's already got her linked to Barack Obama. That's been his strategy from day one. So admitting you voted for him, of course you voted for him. I mean, you said you're 100% Democrat. You have been since birth. Well, then that means you voted for him when, you know, maybe not during the primary, but after the primary, you voted for him. So, you're the Secretary of State, so you know who votes for who. And to me, the big problem with that is, you know, like I said, I can see you don't want to, she could have said any number of responses, yes, and I've been somewhat disappointed in his performance, or, you know, she didn't have to say yes, and I worked at the ground he walked on.
Sure.
There's any number, and I mean, and boy, if there's a predictable question, I mean, let's face it, your opponent spends millions of dollars tying you to Barack Obama. I mean, how, as you said, how ill-prepared can you be that you're not ready to be asked a question about your standing, your opinions, your, you know, anything about Barack Obama. I mean, that's what McConnell's made the campaign about. If you go in thinking that the editorial board, biased as they can be, you think they were just, they were not going to ask that question? I mean, it's front and center. So, yeah. And in the end, utterly uncourageous. I mean, and that was typically my response, was uncourageous. You voted,
that's why
you vote. Own it.
Well, that's
you
it.
You know, it's like if you're speeding and you drive past a cop, you don't say, oh, no. Here, you do something right. Just do something. If you're a decent human being, you own it. So if she voted for him, own it, Allison, and have the guts to do it. Because, by God, if you win this race and you can cast a vote to send my children off to fight a frickin' war, I want to at least know you've got the guts to own a stinking vote in an election where it was a landslide away from your candidate anyway. So it's just
own your
vote. You don't have the courage to own your vote. You don't have the courage to vote on, you know, you can't even sit there and say yes or no to a simple question like that, then you don't have any business casting a yay or nay vote on Capitol Hill that can affect people's lives, affect their incomes, affect the viability of their business, and affect...
That's exactly it. I mean, I agree. I mean, that's the whole point. If you don't even have the strength of conviction or the courage to stand up for who you voted for in your party, if you're working that hard to distance yourself from the president, you know, then that tells us that you don't have the courage to stand up for anything. I thought it was a very telling gotcha moment. And even the Courier Journal, the rag that we always call the Curious Urinal in this town, you know, they even were shocked by that. I mean, as a campaign advisor, whoever is running her campaign has got to be an idiot. I mean, they really do. This is a question that clearly was going to come up. Mitch McConnell has been attacking Allison in Wonderland Grimes for months, tying her to President Obama. So it was that moment where you had to take and have the courage to say, yes, I voted for Obama, but if you didn't vote for Obama, do you want to get caught lying? So perhaps she voted for Romney in 2012, and she's scared to admit that because that will piss off the Democratic base that she continues acting like she supported her whole life. You know, it was a gotcha moment that wasn't a gotcha moment if she had any courage at all.
She's a straight ticket voter. She probably just colored in the Democrat bubble and went on her merry way.
Well, sure, her or daddy did, one of the two. There ain't no doubt about that. But, you know, I mean, it's just very, very interesting that she created this gotcha moment, and it can do nothing but backfire on her. I thought that was really, really puzzling. And even the Courier Journal, when they get into some – go ahead.
It is a complete lack of courage, just totally lacking.
Well, that's absolutely true, and that is the problem. You know, this is a person who says that they want to go up there, and she wants to run, you know, campaign ads where she doesn't know how to shoot a gun but wants to act like she does, you know, and talks about how tough she is, you know, and wants to bring her grandmothers onto damn TV and act like she's something she isn't, which there's no grandmother in the world who's going to say anything bad about their grandkid publicly. It's all this campaign has got to be the worst Senate campaign I have ever seen by any candidate who wants to act like they're credible. Now, where does all of this lead? Well, I'll tell you where it all leads. It leads to David Patterson. You know, we have been waiting all weekend for this judge to make a ruling on whether David Patterson was going to be allowed. He is the Libertarian U.S. Senate candidate, you know, in the same race with Mitch McConnell and Alice in Wonderland Grimes. But U.S. District Judge Gregory Van Tatenhove ruled that the Kentucky Educational Television, KET, who is doing the debate tonight, did not exclude David Patterson from his program tonight because of his political views. And I have to call bullshit. And I tell you, the biggest problem I've got with all of this is KET receives about 14 or 15% of their total funding from federal tax dollars. They receive public funds, and they have the right to tell a legitimate candidate that they cannot be on stage and debate. This is a concern, and there's a lot more to this, because part of what Van Tatenhove said was, the First Amendment is not a rule of quantity at any cost. voters may actually benefit by a forum or debate that includes only those candidates that have a realistic chance of winning rather than many voices competing for very limited time. And he went on to say that what KET cannot do is pick and choose candidates based on viewpoints, and KET has not done so here. However, here's what we've got. Because we have the emails, you've got all this evidence that was put into play here, okay? One of the emails that were included as evidence came from Mike Brower, who is KET's Senior Director of Production Operations. And he's the one who sent out an email talking about how they were changing the criteria of to qualify to be in a debate, and it clearly was designed to exclude David Patterson. And according to his email, Brower wrote, it's to have a way to defend not including only the most extreme cases, like out-of-state crusaders or wacky people who paid the $50 and got two names on a form to qualify as a candidate. Now, you look at Mitch McConnell, Alice in Wonderland Grimes, they got to pay a couple of bucks and get two signatures to make them a candidate. David Patterson had to put out thousands of signatures.
5,000 valid signatures, which means they submit about 7,000 to 7,500 signatures.
Yeah, right, exactly. And that's the problem. How can this judge, with this evidence before him, make this ruling? And I want to point out one other thing here, too, because, you know, we have all been talking about Citizens United. You either, you know, agree with Citizens United or you don't. That's up to each individual to make their decision on. However, for me personally, if you're going to say that a corporation is now can bankroll an unlimited amount of cash to aid a candidate in getting elected, and you're telling a legitimate candidate for an election that they must have $100,000 to even be included in the thought process, this judge just said clearly that if you don't have millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars, you can't run for office, so we don't include you. This judge just said that money buys elections, in my opinion. Would you agree with that?
Well, not only that, but that's what the judge is saying, but I don't know if you recall the Republican primary debates had Matt Bevin and two or three other people that, I don't know, one of them thought they saw ghosts or something like that. You know, these were clearly people who put up the $500 and two signatures. And these crackpots, who nobody knew and nobody knows, not a 7,500 signature type candidate, they got on, and of course it was embarrassing, it was hard to watch, but they got on the debate. You know, so it's like, look, you know, and let's face it, congressional debates from Louisville and stuff, there have been years when absolute hacks have gotten in there and done that. There have been years. I mean, I would be curious to know how much Dr. McFarland has raised. I mean, I know he supposedly has a decent amount of money himself, but has his campaign, you know, what candidates get on there? I hope the Libertarians don't let this go.
Let me point this out, Ed.
Candidates on there that don't raise $100,000.
Well, let me point this out, too, real quick. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I want to point this out, too, because it doesn't matter whether Dr. Mack has raised $100,000 if Dr. Mack has been able to loan his campaign $100,000. If it's his own money, as long as it's $100,000, he's going to get the voice. He's going to get in the debate, and he was allowed the KET debate. And for record's sake, I want to point out two things real quick, if I may, and then I apologize for interrupting you. But, you know, you have to look at this. You know, by what they've just done, when you think about congressmen from Kentucky, let's look at William Natcher. William Natcher served 44 years in Congress. He refused to accept any campaign donations. This is a 44-year incumbent, Ed, and he would not be allowed in this debate by the standards that they just set, which we know were just set to keep Patterson out. Additionally, you yourself ran against John Yarmuth and Todd Lally, and you yourself were allowed to debate. And I know you didn't take in $100,000, but what you did was you embarrassed John Yarmuth and Todd Lally on stage, primarily Lally, and you embarrassed both of them on stage, and that's what they're scared of in a two-party rule. Go ahead. I apologize. I wanted to get that out there.
But, you know, and sometimes the third-party candidate embarrasses themselves. You know, it happened. But I'm looking at it, and I really, really hope that Ken Mulman and David Patterson, they've got a stack of emails. I hope they go through it, and I hope in their downtime, you know, right now they had to drop it because the debate is tonight. You couldn't get another judge to hear it, put a stay on it, all that stuff. And that's what happened with me one time, is you run out of time. But they've got a pile of evidence, and I hope that high heavens that, even as a Republican, I hope they go through there and they, as a court case, continue to, you know, at their pace, seek more evidence. Because I'm personally convinced, you know, being a friend of Ed Marksberry and seeing what the Democrats did to him to railroad him out, broke their own bylaws and able to railroad a true liberal, which he is, whether you agree with him or not. They railroaded his ass out of the primaries and out of the party so that they could clear the way for Allison Wonderland Rhimes. You know,
well,
the Republicans
let's be clear here, too, Ed.
Somewhat painfully tried to sue people off the ballot. And I'm just, and let's face it, Mitch and Allison have both, this is, like I said, as sad as it is, as important a race as it is, this is the only race, the only debate these two could agree to. They're so scared of each other. They're so scared of themselves going off script. But this is the only debate we're getting. So, and they, you know, they constantly, they'll sit there and say, I'll meet them any place, any time. With these rules, you know, I'm getting. So they basically, they have been trying to groom the debates from day one. So I'm convinced somewhere along the way, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, or probably both of them, there is a paper trail, there is an email trail where they leaned on them. They leaned on KET. Hey, those haven't been discovered yet, but they leaned on KET because KET, traditionally, ever since I've been following politics, they let everybody on. And it makes for lively discussion and productive discussion. A lot of times they agree and disagree. But this time, these two candidates has been so evasive and so, in an attempt, so controlling of the whole debate process that you just know it. And here in the real world, they are the ones that pulled the strings. And it wouldn't surprise me for a second that both of them agreed. Hey, let's, you know, Allison, if you win, she may have said, if I win and you bring that dude on here and he makes me look bad, your 14% operating budget is in jeopardy. And Mitch may have said the same thing. But somewhere along the way, one of the two major party candidates, if not both, sat on KET.
Well, I tell you. I tell you, I mean, it's clearly intentional. You know, Ed Marksberry, as far as I'm concerned, Ed Marksberry killed himself because he allowed that to happen, and then he backed the hell off because he got scared and didn't want the publicity anymore when he should have stayed fighting against this kind of injustice. The second thing here is, too, when you look at this, you're absolutely right about both these people, McConnell and Grimes, because, I mean, let's face facts here. You know, they're going to get a debate. They get to tell you exactly how it's going to be. They get to argue about debate rules. When I went into the 2006 televised debates for mayor here in Louisville, I was asked by the League of Women Voters and then asked by WLKY, the two televised debates that they had that allowed me in there against Kelly Downer and Jerry Abramson. And both of them asked me point blank, what were my demands, you know, in order to debate? My answer to them was the same. I have no demands. A debate is not something built on demands. A debate is an open conversation and an open discussion. But Jerry and Kelly got to go back and forth, and they figured out what kind of format they wanted, and I just lived by the rules they set. You know, and that's the way it's been done, except in this particular case, the Uniparty has really went crazy with this. KET was so scared of losing the only televised debate that they would allow. So they've allowed this televised debate, and KET felt like it was upon them to allow, you know, to not blow this debate for Mitch and Alice in Wonderland. I mean, that's the reality of the whole thing. It's ridiculous. The Uniparty is alive and well, and we cannot continue allowing this kind of mindset. As far as I'm concerned, there should be a petition by a couple million people to the federal government to take KET's federal funds away. If they can't be inclusive to the general public, our tax dollars pay for that, then to hell with it. And I've got to make one quick thing here, because I got a text in the chat room that told me I may have misstated one thing. When I used William Natcher as the example a few minutes ago, I meant that if Natcher were a candidate today, he would not be allowed to participate. Because ironically, this whole situation, you know, that they've just created, if you're an incumbent, it doesn't matter whether you take money or not. You can have $0 and pledge never to take a campaign donation. But if you're an incumbent, you're allowed to be in the debate, and you don't have to worry about the $100,000 requirement. This is the hypocrisy of the liberal left and the right-wing Republicans. It really is. This is the hypocrisy of the Uniparty, and I think we're seeing it play out in the exclusion of David Patterson. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree. And like I say, I sincerely hope they go, and even as a Republican, it's so wrong what they've done here, that I sincerely hope that they keep digging. And if it's there, I hope they find it to where somebody flat out, I hope they can find a smoking gun in some email somewhere. They just keep digging, where somebody said, if you let that boy in, you let that man come into this debate, I'm not in. You know, that was somewhere along the way, somebody said that was a condition. And, you know, and speaking to the character of the parties and the character of candidates, it's a two-person race, effectively, in mathematics. But I could almost say that if one or the other, if the Democrat or the Republican in the race were to stand up for the third party, I would have to give them a little bit more consideration than I would be giving them now.
Oh, I totally agree with you. And, you know, that unfortunately is what we continue dealing with, is the fact that no one will stand up for the third party candidates except the third party candidates. And that is a reality we're going to have to take control of. You know, people are going to have to get involved in the process somehow, some way, and quit allowing these atrocities to go on. You know, if Dr. McFarland, you know, didn't happen to be the Republican candidate, he wouldn't be in this race. He wouldn't be allowed to debate John Yarmuth. Because if they allowed him to debate John Yarmuth, then they would have no excuse to keep David Patterson out. You know, it is just so amazing to me how much we continue to allow these atrocities to go on, especially, once again, federal dollars are being used.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, Brooks Wicker. I think he did not raise, you know, and Brooks is a nice guy, and he was the Republican candidate against John Yarmuth last cycle. And if I'm not mistaken, he didn't raise anywhere near $100,000. But all the debates were, he was in them all. There was just two candidates on the ballot anyway. He was in them all. So by these parameters, if a given party put up a weak candidate, say like a Bob DeVore, it's not raising any money. If money's the, you know, if you put up a candidate, then they don't deserve to be heard. If we're doing a house race, if you don't raise $100,000, you don't deserve to be heard. And that would put very dynamic candidates like Phil Moffitt possibly at a disadvantage, because Phil is, you know, and Jerry Miller, awesome candidate. If they're going to put it at $100,000, they're basically saying, they might as well just have one or two debates, because most candidates aren't going to be able to put that kind of money up, whether it's for state, you know, for state
well,
house, for state community, for Congress. U.S. congressional candidates don't always rack up six figures. Sometimes you got weak candidates. Primary candidates rarely rack up six figures. So is what KET is saying here is, like, we're not going to have any debates anymore unless a couple of the big money candidates decide they want to get together with one prepackaged, pre-canned, vet all the questions, and don't drill into any answers kind of debate, which is basically what we're getting tonight.
Oh, I agree. It's really a travesty of injustice to the democratic political process that we're supposed to join this country. Free and open elections, you know, when you're excluding candidates who have qualified for the ballot based on the laws that we set, right? I mean, these are Kentucky laws. it's not that we, you know, the independents are out there trying to, you know, not work within the framework of what they're told they have to work with. They're being put given an unnecessary and an undue burden to qualify. But by God, if they're going through the hassle and the effort to qualify, then they sure as hell should be considered. They sure as hell should have equal access in the process. I mean, it is no easy task to get the thousands of signatures that are forced upon independent or outside of the two-party system candidates like the Libertarians. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back from break, we're going to continue more about this. But I tell you, I want to point out a few things, you know, about Mitch McConnell. And then I really I want to get into a little bit of John Yarmuth tonight, because the hypocrisy that is going on all across the board, and Yarmuth is just another example of that, should dumbfound most of you guys. So stick around. You're not going to want to miss this. Trust me. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Ed Springson Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Don't forget, call-in numbers as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. If you guys are listening to you, please hit that number one on your dial pad. And don't forget to visit our site at LouisvillePolitics.com. Ed, I tell you, man, we've got so many things going on. And in the Courier-Journal, Joe Girth at the Courier-Journal, and the Courier-Journal, of course, we know is an ultra-left, liberal, progressive, communist rag, in my opinion, and most other opinions of people I talk to, you know, so they're always going to try to put lipstick on a pig. You know, it doesn't matter how much lipstick you try to put on a pig, it's still a pig, and it's the same thing when they go into overdrive trying to protect the Democrat candidates. Well, it was fascinating because when we look at this, when we look at everything that's been going out that they're trying to break McConnell down or O'Connell down, and we look at Friday's article where Joe Girth was trying to act like everybody was reaching for straws because Alice in Wonderland Grimes refused to answer questions, and we had a couple of gotcha moments last week. He puts out another story today, and of course he has to, you know, has to put a dig on Mitch McConnell. I'm not going to repeat it. But fascinatingly enough, in this story, and it was actually 2 days ago, my fault, folks, it was actually Saturday. But in this story, what is really interesting is he wants to start comparing polls. You know, and the polls he's comparing, of course, the latest Bluegrass poll that the Courier-Journal uses, has Alice in Wonderland Grimes pulling ahead of McConnell by 2 percentage points. But two other polls, one by Fox News, one by CBS News, New York Times, and YouGov, still show McConnell ahead by 4. So if you rely on polls, you can make whatever opinion you want to out of it. But the interesting thing is the information that he put in this story, you know, basically says that Joe Girth and the Courier-Journal are full of crap when they continue saying McConnell is so bad. And here's why. Because he puts out the rankings. You know, Congress is ranked best to worst throughout the nation. You know, and Kentucky lawmakers generally rank pretty well. In Washingtonians magazine, they have an annual best and worst of Congress for 2014. And here's what you've got. The Washingtonian has been doing this since 1986. Their October issue coming out this month, according to Joe Girth's article, for workhorse in the Senate, Mitch McConnell comes in first place as a Senate workhorse. When you get into the House workhorse, there's a tie between House Speaker John Boehner and Kentucky Representative Hal Rogers, you know, Jeb Hensarling out of Texas, and Steve Scalise, all of which are Republicans. You know, when you look at the rising star in the Senate, Rand Paul, of course, comes in first place. When you look at the best speaker in the Senate, Rand Paul comes in second place. The worst speaker in the Senate is Mitch McConnell and Barbara Boxer. And yet, you know, Mitch McConnell is a Senate workhorse, but he's a bad speaker. We get all of that. I mean, I can go through all of this stuff, but it is clearly obvious that when it comes to the rankings by the Washingtonian, who's been doing this since 1986, it's clearly obvious that Mitch McConnell actually has worked pretty hard and done a good job by their rankings. Would you agree?
Well, I would agree. I would say if they say he's the worst speaker, it's like, well, if Allison wins, she will continue that tradition. I can't imagine a worse public speaker than her, to be honest with you. Wow.
It's fascinating to me because I look at this and I'm like, you know, I'm like, you, wow. You know, here we've got, you know, the Courier-Journal who refuses to acknowledge the obvious in anybody. They refuse to be impartial when they're dealing with politics. They have to have their own agenda. But it's fascinating that based on the stuff that Joe Girth put in this article, it proves that the Courier-Journal and Joe Girth are nothing more than the liberal hacks who are bought and paid for with the Democratic mafia machine here. That's my opinion. I'm sticking to it. We just talked about David Patterson and everything else. We were talking now about how Mitch McConnell has done so well according to the rankings. We really want to get into – I kind of want to get into the John Yarmuth discussion because it's going to be the only time I've got you on air this week. And I want to take this down the road because one of the things that I talked about late last week was the fact that Barack Obama is on his Blame the Rich tour while he's sitting in billionaires' houses raising funds for the Democratic Party, which is hypocritical and laughable at best in the first place. But according to PolitiFact last week, PolitiFact did some studies, and they found when they looked at public information that's available, they did some studies, cross-checked the open secrets list of the top 100 individuals donating to outside spending groups in these elections, and they compared that against Forbes' list of the world's billionaires. And as of June the 19th, there were 22 billionaires listed on the open secrets list that were contributing to campaigns. Of those 22 billionaires, 13 of 22, were giving their money predominantly to liberal groups or Democratic Party, you know, PACs, super PACs, whatever. And the other 9, of course, were giving to Republican and conservative groups. So, you know, you look at this, the Democrats far outnumber the so-called rich billionaire Republicans in going after the money. Among these people, remember, the Democrats like to say that the Koch brothers, and yeah, I know it's not the Koch, but that's what we've always called them here, the Koch brothers are the big, bad, evil billionaires that Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party answer to. But they never say one daggone thing about the highest billionaire donors to the Democratic Party, which is George Soros, billionaire Michael Bloomberg, former New York City mayor. All of these donors are high money that are giving all of this money to the Democratic Party. Nobody calls them on the hypocrisy in mainstream. What a coincidence, right?
Oh, yeah. Huge coincidence, yeah.
It's fascinating.
It's all about agendas. I mean, the Koch brothers are, you know, they're easy targets. You know, they probably overstepped their bounds a bit. But, you know, it always strikes me as peculiar that, you know, we especially when you think in Bloomberg and Soros, is how much the Democrats slam Wall Street, and there are two Wall Streeters right there. I mean, Wall Streeters. So, you know, yeah, and the hypocrisy's never brought up. I mean, hypocrisy should cut both ways, but unfortunately in the media, it pretty much cuts about, you know, 80% one way and 20% the other.
It's really fascinating, and you go further when you start looking at this. And part of another story that we put out last week, and I will get into Yarmouth in a second because it's all going to come together, trust me here. But we're continuing to be told that Republicans are the party of the rich. This is something that Barack Obama, again, he's going to billionaires' houses for these massive fundraisers and telling that the whole world, these billionaires are sitting there listening to him, blaming the rich billionaires for Republican control. It's crazy. But when you look at Congress as a whole, according to a report out of Yahoo, and I will go ahead and put this in the chat room as well for you folks that are in there, according to a report from a Yahoo News, that's not exactly true either. Because when we continue talking about Republicans being the party of the rich, when you look at the Congress and the congressional districts, the wealthiest congressional districts are Democrat-controlled. Of the 10 richest House districts, only two of those House districts have Republican congressmen. Okay, that is fascinating. When you look at places like New York and California, obviously that's Democrat and liberal. But the richest congressional district is a 12th district in New York. That includes Manhattan's Upper East Side, Queens, and Brooklyn. Democrat Carolyn Maloney is in her 11th term in that district. And when you talk about per capita income, in Maloney's district, it's $75,479 a year. That means $75,000 every year for every man, woman, and child per capita income. The next highest income district, of course, is in California, and it comes in at $61,273 a year. And Democrat Henry Waxman is in his 20th term representing the L.A. district. What's really even going even deeper than this, let's forget about that because you're talking about L.A. and New York, right, two of the highest cost of living places in the world. So let's look at the average per capita income. Across the country, Democratic House districts have an average per capita income of $27,893. Republicans, under $27,000. The Democrats average $1,000 higher on a per capita income nationwide than the so-called rich Republicans do. These are fascinating numbers. Now, people get bored with numbers, but remember, we continue to talk. I mean, the biggest thing that these idiots talk about is income redistribution, you know, redistributing wealth. They talk about the poor, you know, the old rich Republicans answering to the billionaires and things like that. So all we're doing with these numbers are telling you folks the facts are that we know that they're lies, but mainstream media is once again covering them. Ed, go ahead.
Well, you know, I tell you, that's to me, the money thing is always a distraction because, you know, it's one way to pit Americans against other Americans. And, you know, you talk about the wealthiest districts. That one has always fascinated me. It's like at what point, you know, if the Democrats are talking more taxes, and this has been one of my gripes all along. They're like, oh, you know, we need tax the rich. And I always have to point out to people, look, the rich don't actually have an income. They make it in equity, okay? They make it in equity and dividends. Until you decide to, you know, if you really, and I've said this to many liberals, says you can just hit the door, get out of my sight. You're going to get embarrassed if you keep talking that crap, because until the day comes that you want to treat capital gains and dividends income and such, and interest income and rental income, which is where the rich really, that's how they increase their wealth. Until you're ready to address that and tax that as income and put it on the tax income, just the same as a week-to-week check from somebody working at Ford or somebody like me working for themselves. And so you're ready to do that, you're full of crap. You're not
taxing
the rich. Yeah, so
there
you go. You know, well, you want to see, I would be curious as all get out to see if the Democrats actually just, played the nut up or shut up crap and said, you know what, let's just flatten out capital gains, dividends, rental, interest income. Let's just all flatten it out and let's put it on the same scale as regular income and let's not cap anything. You make it, you pay on it. Let's see how fast their rich friends stick around. Because right now, I have a lot of friends who are wealthy Democrats and they're liberal as could be. And they make their money. They make their money in LLCs, and they increase in equity and stuff like that. And they write off just as much as the honoriest Republican ever did. They find a way to expense stuff. They make money and they book it at a lower tax rate than the income rate. But then they'll sit there and they'll want to talk about the evil rich or something. It's like, you know what? If you want to impress me, pay the same tax rate that I pay on my paycheck every week.
And then that's not good.
You pay that on your income, and we got something to talk about.
Well, and then let's not forget, it's not just about the rich either, because you get into the liberal agenda, you get into the left's agenda, and it's always about racism as well. Case in point was the KET debate between Mike McFarland, Dr. Mike, and John Yarmuth. McFarland, they were talking about government assistance programs and things like that, and of course, part of the context, they were talking about the West End minority community, and McFarland did use a bad choice of words. I won't deny that, because, he used the phrase, breeding these people, when he was referring to those on government assistance programs. And he went further and said it was a bad choice of words. I meant fostering. We're fostering a situation where people get stuck on these programs. This wasn't a white or a black thing. This was people that are on government assistance programs. So, he used a bad word, breeding, but he wasn't talking about the minority community that we were breeding, minorities to be raised on government assistance programs. But what's fascinating here is I liked the response, and again, I'm using the Courier-Journal this is a Wave 3 story. Wave 3 put this story out, and they were trying to justify this as well. So they decided to put a quote in there about from John Yarmuth. And John Yarmuth's quote was this: I never talk about those people as they and them. These are people that I consider an important part of my life. And his exact quote was this: I consider them an important part of my life. So he never refers to those people as they and them, but I consider them an important part of my life. So he's already contradicted himself in his own statement, and there's no hypocrisy noted by Wave 3 or anybody else. Everybody else wants to sit out there and claim that McFarland must be a racist because he was making a comment about government programs. And then John Yarmuth clearly is a racist himself because he says he never refers to those people as they and them, but I consider them an important part of my life. What did he just do there? I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
Can they not even read their own print?
I know. And to me, that is so minor. It's just two guys in a heat exchange. And honestly, I think they both had a good point to make there. But, the fact of the matter is I'm sorry, when I really speak of these people and those people, I'll speak of those people as in the Riverfields people who think they're so important, John Yarmuth, that they can demand that a $250 million tunnel be dug under the area that they live so that they don't have to deal with the traffic. And, gosh, what could that $250 million have been done to do? You're bringing in international crews, so it's like, yeah, those people up there in the liberal, northeast section of Jefferson County where the bridge is going through, yeah, those people can demand that we get us people spend $250 million. So, I don't know.
Here's some other information.
Two guys getting riled up. I put very little into that. I think they're, they both.
Well, sure, you do.
Fear people, and I don't think either one of them is racist, but the paper does conveniently, those, whatever. It's like, if that's all the paper's got to write about or any news program's got to report on, it's like, hey, guess why you're going broke?
Well, the fascinating thing about all of this, Ed, is it really doesn't matter to me either, because I think it's blown way out of proportion. But the fascinating thing is it just proves that the mainstream media has an agenda, because they tried to turn this into a racial problem where no racial problem existed. And I tell you, John Yarmuth has a lot more problems than him sitting here and, you know, contradicting himself in one statement. And I'm going to tell you guys this real quick. In 2011 and 2012, John Yarmuth served on a bunch of House committees. He served on the Budget Committee. He served on a Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. He served on the Subcommittee for TARP, Financial Services, and Bailouts. He served on the Subcommittee on National Security, Homeland Defense, and Foreign Operations. And he also served on the Ethics Committee. There's a reason I give you this list. In 2011 and 2012, John Yarmuth was on the Ethics Committee as one of his committees. In 2013 and 2014, John Yarmuth is no longer on the Ethics Committee. And here is why. One of the things that Dr. Mike has been talking about has been Obamacare. It's been a major issue because more than 56% of Americans think Obamacare should be repealed. That's the truth. The majority of Americans think it should be repealed. One story that nobody is putting any serious look at is a story emanating out of New York. In New York, one of the problems with Obamacare is that hospitals are being penalized, and the government is taking money from them for services rendered if a patient is readmitted within 30 days of being released. So if you go to the hospital anywhere in this country with Obamacare, and you spend a day in the hospital, you go home, and a week later, 2 weeks later, whatever, you get worse and have to go back. If you go back to the hospital and have to be readmitted in less than 30 days, then Obamacare says, wait, now we're going to penalize you, and we're not going to pay you for this service. So hospitals around the country are losing a lot of money, and they're trying to force the doctors to keep you in the hospital longer if they can. The reality is what these doctors are now doing is, in a lot of cases, they are taking these patients who have been hurt or injured or whatever. Once they've admitted to the hospital, when they release them, they are releasing them to other places like rehab facilities, you know, mental health facilities, wherever. And then on the 31st day, they're allowed to readmit them to the hospital without being penalized by Obamacare. Well, here's why this is important. Remember, John Yarmuth was on the Ethics Committee in 2011 and 2012. The reason that this is important is because in 2012, Obamacare passed. John Yarmuth doesn't get his money from Sonny's Barbecue alone, folks. He's got a $5 million investment in his brother's business, which just happens to be rehab. In-home rehab care. It's called Almost Family. So when these doctors are taking these patients and forcing them into rehab, there is no distinction that I have been able to find, and correct me if I'm wrong, folks, there is no distinction that I have been able to find that rehab has to be inpatient at a rehab facility, which simply means that Almost Family, John Yarmuth's family-owned healthcare industry that he has a $5 million stake in, gets to make money on rehab. So they are kicking people out of the hospitals into the rehab that John Yarmuth clearly benefits from. Why? Why is he no longer on the Ethics Commission? Because I clearly think that this has to be an ethical violation. You know, when Yarmuth was on the Ethics Commission, he joined the Congressional Home Health Caucus. These were people who set the value of in-home health care. Guess what? Bingo, here we go, right? He also co-sponsored a bunch of bills, including the Home Health Care Planning Improvement Act. It was going to expand the number of health professionals who can refer patients to home health care. Imagine that. Yarmuth also co-sponsored a legislative amendment that was going to block Medicare cuts to providers, including home health aides. Imagine that. Okay, all of these things were directly going to benefit Almost Family, and he had to get off of the Ethics Commission. He was unethical. I don't think there's any doubt or any way to not prove that at this point. Your thoughts?
Well, that's pretty good. I'm going to have to go read that when you put all that up. But, I mean, yeah, the thing that gets me is because I know a lot of people in the healthcare profession, not any home healthcare, which you know, in and of itself is a fantastic idea, a whole lot cheaper than a hospital. But, you know, the hospitals have to get these satisfaction. Not only do they have the readmittance, and, of course, you know, a lot of people are seeking pain meds and things like that in our, unfortunately, in our state. A lot of people don't take care of themselves when they get out and follow the discharge orders, so they're going to be back. So you're asking hospitals to eat that a lot. There's also a satisfaction thing where if they don't get the absolute highest marks, their Medicare payments get prorated. So, yeah, it's very interesting to see, you know, that seems to be taking care of the home health care sector while the hospitals are screaming bloody murder right now as far as their Medicare payments and things like that, getting them prorated based on satisfaction surveys. So
it gets better.
Man, no, gotta make money. I can do that. It's unfortunately.
Sure, he has. He has we, the taxpayer, making his money. He's using us to make his money. He's benefiting from the office, and this is a clear indication of that. And when you go to Ballotpedia, folks, it gets even better. Yarmuth voted for TARP. 61% of Americans disapproved of TARP, and he voted for it. Yarmuth supported the auto bailout. Remember the Cash for Clunkers program? 56% of America didn't want an auto bailout. 57% of America did not want the stimulus bill. He voted for all of that. You know, you get into the cap and trade bill. You know, 42% did not believe it was going to help us at all. It was going to hurt the economy, which it did. 19% believed it would help. So he has clearly voted against the voters across the spectrum. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about that. He does not vote on what the voters tell him to vote on. But here is why Amo's family, his home health care, the blatant disregard for the American taxpayer by making sure the rules allow him to benefit like that. But his yearly net worth in 2006, based on his own congressional disclosures, was $7,998,000. 6 years later, that number almost tripled. It went to $21,201,000. In 6 years, he has helped his average net worth move up by about 200% or better. When you look at this, that's a 28% average annual growth by the time you figure in compound and all the other stuff. It's a 28% average annual growth estimated. The American citizen today, me and you, Ed, in that same six-year period, we have had a median yearly decline in our net worth of about 1%. We have declined 1%, and he is growing at 28% a year. You think he hasn't benefited from Obamacare? Do you think maybe that's why he had to get the hell out of the Ethics Committee? Because he was going to be screwed if he stayed there? There was no way to justify it? Discuss.
Oh, well, it's not only that, but, you know, there have been some Ford stock purchases. The one that I gripe about often enough, we talk about corporate bailouts, corporations not paying taxes. When General Electric, which makes more of their money off of financing than they do off of making toasters and water heaters, when the Congress voted to insure their unsecured debt, which was huge credit card debt and stuff, it amazingly, the day after, which makes you think the order was put in the day before, the day after that they passed that, Don Yarmuth picked up some $50,000 worth of GE stock. So, you know, hey, it's good to be the king. It's good to be on the front end of information. Or as we say in technology and tooling, it's good to be on the cutting edge. It's bad to be on the bleeding edge.
It's not just GE stock, man. There's a lot out there right now. We're investigating right now. It looks like John Yarmuth may have possibly taken advantage of insider trading, considering Ford Motor Company. When Ford went to that downfall and their stock dropped down to anemic levels, you know, $2 and $3 a share, John Yarmuth bought up a lot of Ford stock. And I tell you what, that's not coincidental. I'm checking that out now to verify that story. In my opinion, if he did that, it's unethical, it's insider trading. But, oh, by the way, if you're an elected member of Congress, you don't have to worry about insider trading. You're exempt from being accused of all that crap. But we're going to put those stories out. We're going to verify that. And once we get it verified, we're going to put those out for the voters before the November election. This is getting very, very disturbing of how much people don't know. I might even buy flyers and put flyers on every door in Louisville. I'll come up with the money. Who cares? We'll find it. but we're going to have to do something immediately because this kind of stuff has got to be put to a stop. So, you know, it's very interesting. Ed, we are out of time. We're running straight into the KET debates here in a minute or two. Final thoughts, real quick.
Yeah, final thoughts. Look, the KET debates has now been politicized. And as you and I can both vouch for, rather than criticize them, I'm going to give a big thumbs up to WLKY in Louisville and the League of Women Voters. They include every candidate. To my knowledge, they've never snubbed a candidate for reasons like that. So you know what? If you get the chance, you know, whether you watch tonight's debate or not, what a waste of time. I sincerely believe that. It's just going to be them defending each other against their commercials, I have a feeling. But it's an incomplete debate. So watch it if you want. I'll probably watch it just to roll my eyes, you know, give my eyes some good exercise. But when the League of Women Voters and WLKY has any debate, watch it and you know, let people know you watch it and give them positive responses because they are, you know, and we need that kind of stuff. And it's a shame. And that's probably why Allison and Mitch won't be doing the League of Women Voters WLKY debate because I don't think the League of Women Voters takes crap off of anybody. And it's all or nothing, folks. We're not gonna filter this debate for you. We're into it being inclusive or nothing at all. So, you know, that's all I say. I'm embarrassed and I'm disgusted at KET right now, but it just makes LKY and the League of Women Voters look all that much better.
Well, I tell you, and thank you for the comments, Ed. I'm going to make this short and sweet. I agree with you in the League of Women Voters, and perhaps that's why Ms. McConnell and Allison Wonderland Grimes won't debate there, is because they refuse to exclude David Patterson, the legitimate third candidate, Libertarian candidate, on the ballot for this Senate race. I'm not going to give you a long spiel tonight, folks, because I know there's a lot of our listeners who really want to get to the debate. You guys can check out the podcast later. We gave you plenty of valuable information throughout this hour. Make sure you check it out. In the meantime, don't forget our good friend Dale the Truth tomorrow night with his TNT Tuesday Night Truth Show. And I'll be back on Wednesday night at 7, and we'll do a recap on the debate and everything else. All right. Thanks so much.
Dale's going to be in rare form after the debate.
Oh, yeah. Dale's going to be in rare form tomorrow night. You can guarantee it. That's it for tonight, folks. Don't forget, tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday at 7 o'clock right here, same time, same channel. Have a great night. God bless. We'll talk to you, Ed.
Have a good one, Mr. Springsteen.